Yep, Chair, you're now live on YouTube.
Thank you very much. All right, everyone. So welcome to this virtual Cabinet panel on the environment meeting, which is being conducted with members and officers at various locations, communicating via audio and video and online. There's also the opportunity for the public and press to listen and view the proceedings. Before the meeting starts, I'd like to invite our committee member and scrutiny officer to explain how proceedings are going to work tonight and to confirm the members and officers who are in attendance.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll start with the roll call. When I call your name, please can you indicate your attendance to confirm that everyone is present and can hear and be heard. Start with our councillors. Councillor Bryant. I think you were muted at the time. Sorry, Councillor Bryant. Unfortunately, I can't hear you. We will come back to you when your audio is returned, unfortunately. Councillor Collins.
Hello.
Thank you. Councillor Dennis Harburg.
Hello.
Councillor Jarvis.
Hello.
Councillor Morris.
Yes.
Councillor Muir.
Present.
Councillor Strong.
Present.
Councillor Levitt.
Good evening.
Councillor Ruggiero Sciacca.
Present.
Thank you very much. Our officers, Ruben Iovu.
Present.
Thank you very much. Georgina Chapman.
Here.
Thank you. And Daryl Simmons is operating IT for us. And the members of the public that I'm expecting in no particular order. Sue Lines, who's not joined us yet. Vicky Wire.
Yep, I'm here.
Thank you. Hi. Diane Ketcher.
Yeah, here.
Thank you. Jilly Chegwin.
I'm here.
Thank you. Lisa Heaton. Glenda Dixon. Annie Sander. Thank you. John Webb.
Present.
Julia Sonanda.
I'm here.
Thank you. And is there anyone else in the room that I have not called on? No.
Me.
Thank you very
Nikki.
Much.
Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, Nikki Clark. Sorry.
Yeah. Like, I hadn't requested to speak, but I'm really pleased to be here. So.
Thank you very much. Councillor Bryant has not yet joined us. Chair, but I'm happy to keep an eye out for her as and when she returns.
Yes, if you could. I think that she's doing the classic IT fix of turning it off and turning it back on again, and then hopefully that should restart things. So she'll join us when she's able to.
Thank you very much. Please note that the meeting is being streamed live onto YouTube and recorded via Zoom. Extracts from the remote/partly remote meetings protocol are included with the agenda. And the full version is available on the Council's website, which includes information regarding live streaming, noise interference, the rules of debate and voting. Members are requested to ensure that they are familiar with the protocol. Are there any questions before we start the meeting? In that case, I will now hand over to the Chair of the meeting, Councillor Elizabeth Dennis-Harburg.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Okay, so I shall start with apologies for absence. I have Councillor Ian Moody and Councillor Levitt is subbing. I don't think we have any other apologies, and Councillor Bryant will be readmitted to the meeting as soon as she's able to be. Minutes for approval. We're asked to take as read and approve as a true record the minutes of the meetings of the panel on the 5th of March 2020, the 7th of July 2020, the 9th of September 2020, the 17th of November 2020. I think as per other meetings of this council and the difficulties with COVID and administration, we know why there's been a delay in these minutes coming forward for approval, but does anybody have any amendments to make to the minutes of any of those meetings? Seeing lots of shaking of heads, in that case, we need to formally move to the vote. Do we need to vote on this, William?
Unless there are any plans to either abstain or object, I think we can take them as read and approved.
If we can do that, I'd prefer that and keep things as informal. Okay, in which case, the formal part I have to do is I now authorise the committee member and scrutiny officer to apply my digital signature to the approved minutes. And I suppose also as co-chair, Councillor Jarvis would do the same.
Yes, I'm happy to do that.
Excellent. Okay. Next bit of formality, chair's announcements. In accordance with council policy, this meeting is being audio recorded as well as filmed. The audio recordings will be available to view on mod.gov and the film recording via the NHDC YouTube channel. Members are reminded to make declarations of interest before an item. I don't think we will have any. The detailed reminder about this and speaking rights is set out under the chair's announcements on the agenda. The theme of this meeting will be a roundup of the panel's work in the past year, and the panel will note the topic of air quality has not been included in tonight's discussion. The environmental health team that manage the monitoring information and production of the annual status report have been diverted to work around the COVID pandemic and the withdrawal from the European Union. The aim is to have this as a future agenda item to fully explore the impact of COVID on areas with poor air quality. That was slightly mealy-mouthed, but essentially, we've had to move the air quality item back because we do not have the resource to do the job that we really, really want to do on this particular item. And I think Councillor Jarvis and I have both taken the view that it is much better for us to do the job properly and to do it well with all of the relevant supporting data than it is to sort of do stuff in ignorance or absent some of the information that would help us make relevant and useful contributions as a panel. I'll be taking item 8, which is the work programme and action tracker, before item 6, which is public participation. Item 8, the work programme and action tracker, will include a presentation and discussion regarding the review of the climate change strategy. So, moving to item 4, notification of other business. There's been none received. Item 5... Yes.
Sorry, just before we start, can I ask Councillor Bryant to check that her audio works?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Welcome back, Val. Lovely. So, thank you for checking that. I have got item 5, information note work programme and action tracker for 2019-2020. Do you want to do that now, Ruben?
Yes, I can do. Just get that all up. Bear with me. Yes, thank you, Chair. You have before you the information note, which updates the activity of this panel group. I draw your attention to 2.2. We provide a little bit of an update. And I will touch on this later in the presentation I'm going to do on the climate change strategy. But the group will be aware that we had a project called the Iddi SitNet, which was a food growing program in the city of Letchworth Garden City. And it was a European funded program. But because of the Heritage Foundation's withdrawal, there was an option for us to support this group. Unfortunately, the European Commission had another partner in place already, and they went with that. So our proposal to support this programme was rejected and declined. And it seems that the negotiations were already in train quite early on, so they didn't seem too much an opportunity to progress that. We participate in something called the Hertfordshire Climate Change and Sustainability Partnership, which is a broader partnership of the County Council and the District Councils and the LEP, the Local Enterprise Partnership. We are heavily involved in that, and I'll probably pick up on this later, but we are working on an action plan around biodiversity and a scoping document to secure a county-wide baseline around biodiversity, which I will pick up on later. I'll move into the action tracker, if I may. As we've talked about earlier, COVID has affected a lot of our activity around that, but there are some things that I'd like to highlight to the panel that have we have moved on in the last year. The first one is EP24, which was around investigating the costs of a weekly update in the Comet or monthly billboard. We've had a look at this and it seems not to be financially viable at the moment, but we are going to look to other ways that we could widen our communications reach across the district. So we'll keep you informed of that. In regard to EP29, which is around TerraCycling, the communication team had worked with the Morrison's Food Champion to secure a TerraCycle collection point at the Morrison's store in Letchworth. And I think there's some further work going on around TerraCycle collection. I think there's an application to an area committee to secure a porter cabin. But I think Julia could tell you more about that than I. We have secured a waste awareness officer in regard to EP41, who is compiling a programme for East and North Harts. EP42, which is around community composting workshops, we have an advertisement on the external site for subsidised home composting bins and wormeries. EP30 and 39 is regard to external recycling and advertising real nappy campaigns, and they are both, there are external links for reuse of furniture and household items, and the Waste Aware Real Nappy website have links on our North Hertfordshire Library Facebook pages. And those are the ones I wanted to pick up with you today. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, lovely. In that case, do members have any questions for Ruben about the work tracker? I have not got participants open. I have got it open now, so I can keep an eye on everything. There we go. Lovely. In that case, I think then we're moving on to the public participation, or did we want to do the... should we move on to...
Chairman, I was a bit slow in getting my hand up. I had a question, actually, particularly around some of the recycling, if I could ask it.
Okay, yeah, sure.
One of the things I had noticed, and that's, I don't actually know if they've got a proper name for them, but you know when you have your drugs and you push out your pills and then you
The blister packs, we can take those to Superdrug. They are...
in Letchworth. I just wondered whether or not there was any... going to be any sort of move to try and encourage one of the chemists in Hitchin to perhaps also be a drop-off point as well, or one of the supermarkets, or just somewhere that, rather than having to trape, or it just doesn't seem right having to trape over to Letchworth to drop off those sort of blister packs, and if there was any initiative going to be done to try and find a location in the Hitchin town for that.
That's not something that's on the waste programme at the moment, purely because it's relatively low impact and it's being led by private sector. But it's something that we're able to track and keep an eye on. And because Superdrug's running this initiative and Hearts Waste Partnership is on top and aware of it, then at some point in future, when we feel it's appropriate and offers resources available to work with other stores in other locations and try and encourage them to do a bit more social responsibility type work, it's an item we could pick up, but it's not something that's going to be viable for the now with what resource we've got.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I can also, I thought I saw Councillor Bryant's hand as well, but it's disappeared, so it might be something for later.
I'm not sure that the question I was going to ask is this is the suitable time for it. So I'll come back later.
Okay. That's fine. In that case, then, I think we shall move on to the next item, which I think we're going next to public participation. And I think that we have the presentation from Transition Town Letchworth. I wasn't sure. Are you going to lead that one, Julia?
I think I am. I mean, actually, we've given a paper, which I'm not going to go through in detail because I know that would take far too long tonight. But hopefully we gave it far enough in advance so you've all had a chance to read it. So I was just going to talk to that, really. And So thank you for letting us participate tonight. One of the things we do as trustees is regularly review sort of our activities and the impact they're actually having and the difference we're making. And during the time in the summer when we could actually get together in a garden, one of the things we reviewed was really sort of how much impact and effect the actions that we'd sort of delivered to a numerous of these cabinet panel meetings, how many actions had resulted as a result of some of the ideas we put forward. And that that summary we've decided to share with you tonight because it seemed fitting, you know, for a meeting where you're going to review sort of what you've been doing for the past year. So we hope you've managed to take a look at that. In some ways, we felt, you know, we put a lot of good actions in, but not all of them seem to be actually a bit taken forward, you know, when we sort of looked at all the ideas and what happened. And we sort of had a discussion about why that might be. And we wanted to share back some thoughts, really, on what it's felt like to be a public participant in this panel, you know, and bringing ideas to it. So we kind of thought there was sort of three things that came to mind. And one was that as a group like Transition Town Letchworth, where we've got our fingers in many pies and have been around since 2008, we have an awful lot of different ideas. So when a theme, quite wide-ranging theme came up, we could bring quite a lot of ideas to the panel on our sets of slides. And of course, with a 5-minute speaking slot, that doesn't give you any time at all to deliver an idea. So in some ways, by giving slots to groups, those with actually a wide remit were often disadvantaged in actually how much time they had to get an idea across. And I just like to reflect that for going forward, that maybe it's not time per group, but time per idea that might be more effective. The other thing that we sort of wanted to share was that sometimes there was a feeling that the papers, you know, to accommodate, sort of deal with that, we'd often put papers in rather than just talking, which we've done again tonight. But in some ways, the discussion for 10 minutes after our 5-minute slot was generally based on the presentation and only picked up one or two of the ideas. So some of our ideas, we don't know if you think they were good, bad or indifferent, because they sort of got lost. They never got discussed at all or picked up. And the question is, what happens now with those ideas? You know, and that's something I'd like, perhaps, if you could pick up tonight in your discussion of how you've been doing and where you go next. And the other thought we've often bought is we've bought ideas for some topics that clearly are relevant to this panel, but they're also relevant to other committees, particularly around transport and areas like that. And often we find ourselves being told, pop to the other committee or back to this committee. But the reality is that those ideas have just seemed to have dropped down the slots. They're not actually picked up by anybody. And that's concerning, you know, that we can't get a clear answer of which committee, which panel we should be actually talking to on some of these subjects, particularly around cycle networks and things like that. I've even written to the managing director to actually try and get some clarity. And I've been waiting months for a response about which is the right panel that will actually make decisions on matters like cycle networks. So Claire, really, I think what I would like the panel to think about tonight is there a way that actually we can go back over the contributions of groups like Transition Town Letchworth and the many other community groups that have contributed and come along given time to this panel? Could we go back through some of those papers and actually pick out and make sure that we've looked at the actions and given them real consideration? If the panel can perhaps put in some thought into the process that might be done for doing that tonight, that would be really, I think we'd really appreciate that. One of the actions that we put forward that I did actually want to focus on and draw attention to tonight was an action we gave about NHDC having the most ambitious emissions targets possible and introduced swiftly through appropriate local planning policies to ensure that all new homes are required to meet the maximum energy efficiency standards allowed under the National Policy Planning Framework. Tonight, I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that government's recently published its responses to its Future Home Standard consultation that they did in 2019. And in it, in paragraph 2.40, it says, "We recognise that there is a need to provide local authorities with a renewed understanding of the role the government expects local plans to play in creating a greener built environment and to provide developers with the confidence that they need to invest in the skills and supply chains needed to deliver new homes from 2021 onwards. To provide some certainty in the immediate term, The government will not amend the Planning and Energy Act 2008, which means that local planning authorities will retain powers to set local efficiency, energy efficiency standards for new homes. I think this is really important for North Harts District Council, because with a local examination plan coming to an end and many developments already going through planning, we'd really like to see NHDC now take this opportunity that government's given you to put in some supplementary planning documents to ensure the homes we built in North Harts are capable of operating at zero carbon as the grid decarbonises without any major retrofit work being required. So we hope this panel will actually think about setting up a working group now, to, you know, very quickly, to actually get on and see, well, what could you do with those powers that you've just been given by the government? One of the things we've been doing in lockdown is participating in some transition network events, because, you know, we're part of a national network. And it's been really interesting to hear from other sort of transitioners about how they've been working with their local authorities to actually do climate change strategies. And we've seen lots of and heard about lots of different approaches. And one of the things I'm wondering, you know, that sounded quite effective was actually setting up little working groups, which actually involved councillors, officers and community groups working as equals to come up with the strategy. So I think as we go forward and you think about, you know, this is what we've tried for the last year and a bit. Is this the right approach to continue with these sort of meetings and 5 minute slots for the public? Or could we actually get something much more exciting, useful by actually looking at the expertise you've seen amongst all the different participants and bringing it into appropriate working groups to get a really exciting action plan together? So we can, I suppose, move on from the talking and the meetings and somehow get the actions on the ground that we so desperately need if we're going to be zero carbon, you know, by 2030, which I'm sure many of us would like. I think the thing reading through the government consultation responses, what struck me is that actually whatever the government proposed, the people responded wanted even more. I think there's a real energy across the country, throughout North Harts, to actually get on with climate change and get things happening. So I suppose tonight I'd like to say it's nice to hear there is stuff happening and from the action tracker from Rubin, but should we have a think about it? Could we have a think about whether we're really maximising all the knowledge and energy we've got to get the best action plan possible? Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Julia. I think that was excellent and there were some very, very valid points made there, and it's absolutely the right meeting for us to have these thoughts and start thinking about evaluations and the way forward for this panel. John, did you want to add or build anything on top of what Julie has already presented?
Not at all. Thanks very much.
Right. Lovely. In that case, I'm going to ask if anybody's got any sort of questions for Julia, or if everyone in this on this call wants to sort of move to having a discussion of the issues generally. I can see three hands up. I didn't see the order that they came in, so I'm just going to take them in the order that they are on my participants panel. So sorry if anyone is offended by that. Councillor Collins, you were first.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to be the boring person who's read the papers and rattled through them. So if you haven't got your papers in front of you, I might jump around a bit. For reasons that I think Councillor Jarvis is going to go into, I'm going to skip past biodiversity. Julia made a very good point about the buildings and the fact that we jump around between committees and different people to be talking about it. Just to update you on something that I've been working on with Councillor Clark, who is the executive member for planning and all the local plan stuff. Actually, in the draft statutory planning document, which came to overview and scrutiny, Councillor Levitt and I actually dived into that and made a few recommended changes. And one of the changes for building standards across the district was that we were pushing to try and introduce BREEAM, excellent or very good standards, or passive house standard, which is an international equivalent of that. So that side of things on the SPDs is actually already in process. There is work going on that. And I think you'll be quite pleased with what we're doing. And I think there's a little bit more of that to come later on. And I think Councillor Jarvis will talk a little bit about that too later. But that is something that hasn't been talked about very much in this group, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. So it is something that we have been working through, and there's still some details to go through, but that is very definitely being looked at for the SPD. Moving on to the transport section, you've got that whole section from 13 to 17. Quite a lot of those things are actually also in process. So the working in partnership with local people to agree a vision for cycling and the walking and cycling network. Actually, I was having an email exchange earlier today about a meeting on that exact subject with the Transport Users Forum, which I chair with Helen Oliver. So that is something that is also very much in process. And we do have an officer specifically, he's actually been out on his bike trying to find different routes and try and create a holistic linked up scheme for the whole of North Hertfordshire. So that is, again, something we are doing, and we do actively want engagement from groups and from people such as yourself to make that work. And I know there's a lot of interest in that. And even myself, I've taken up cycling, which is better left in private than in public because I'm not very good at it. Then some of the other work, a lot of the stuff on that list really does need to be looked at by the Transport Users Forum and is actually in under discussion actively. And then just at the bottom, there's a bit of talk about EV charging points and that side of things. Again, as you see in some of the documents that I think Councillor Jarvis is going to be presenting, and also some of the work that Councillor Clark's been doing, that is also very much in the plan and in process at the council. But I hear what you're saying about the format of the meetings. I remember I suggested what is one of the things that got this group going. I suggested in the Hitchin committee meeting that we should get all of the local organisations in Hitchin together to discuss and have a sort of informal talking shop about it. And actually other councillors thought we should actually create a more formal district-wide approach, which then resulted in this committee. And I think that's a good thing. But I think it is great to have you guys pushing us to see more actions on the ground. And I think that's really important. So I don't know, it's something maybe for the chair to look at. Is there a way of moving? If you look at the Transport Users Forum, it's very informal. These cabinet panels are slightly more formal. Is there a way to increase the formality? And I know that's something the chair talked about earlier on, that she wanted to keep it as informal as possible. So maybe that's a good direction to move in. I quite like what was said there.
Okay. All right. So I've heard lots of things from Sam, and I also heard different things from Julia. Julia's essentially told us members of the public, groups that want to do good, do not know where to go in this council to get help doing things and who the right person to speak. There's a signposting void. Sam's done some good signposting there and said, but we are doing all these things. There's this group and there's this group. But Julia doesn't know that. If Transition Towns Letchworth doesn't know the things that this council is doing and the right people at this council to speak to, then we have a problem. So I'm going to condense a lot of what's been said into one item for Reuben to put on the action tracker, which is for us to be better at signposting and engaging with groups and making sure that we cut the bureaucracy so people who want to contribute and help us to help our communities know the right person to speak to straight away. It's the 21st century, and I don't think that we've got any excuse to be sending residents and groups around the houses, especially on important issues like this. I think this is kind of the evaluative meeting for the year as well. And there's an exercise for Steve and I to go away and sit down with officers and take the feedback, look at what's been achieved over the course of this year. And again, sort of rethink formats and rethink the best way for this panel to move forward. So again, those conversations are going to be had, and Julia's points are things that we're going to take away. One exercise that I think we do need to look at, and that Sam sort of alluded to there, is going back through all of those historic contributions, the reports as well as the minutes, and making sure that we've captured and looked at the various suggestions. And then perhaps as part of our end of year panel evaluation exercise almost, maybe we could report back on all of those contributions and what we've done and create some sort of benchmarking for ourselves. It's a bit of formality, but it shows the value that this panel can bring. And I think it gives assurance that we are listening and that people are being heard. I've got more hands. My next hand that I wrote down was Councillor Jarvis. Then I'll take Councillor Levitt and Councillor Morris. Okay, so Steve.
Okay, thanks very much. Well, I thought that, I mean, the Julia's input I thought was extremely useful. I think one of the issues that we face, and this is something that, we face within the council as well as outside, is that dealing with climate change is something that affects everything. The council clearly has separate bits of the organisation that do different things, but the climate emergency and the response to it is something that has some impact on all of those, and that's one of the things that makes it complicated. And I guess what we're trying to do is take a complicated subject and divide it up into bits that we can deal with, but we have to make sure that nothing then falls down the gaps between the bits, and we have to make sure that we haven't forgotten any bits or duplicate any bits. So I think she identifies a real issue. I mean, I think the other thing that's clear is that when I look at the list, there are some things that I know we have done something about, but I realise that no one else would know that. For example, looking at biodiversity, water and food, there are some items there in item 4 about the council looking in terms of what its water use minimisation is. And we were having a discussion last week. There's some work being done on that. We've had a discussion with Affinity Water about doing some more work on that, and also looking in terms of what we can do to encourage residents to use less water. But at least at the moment, we haven't told anyone about that. So that's a justifiable criticism. I think in terms of the structure of the meetings, the objective was to try and structure them subject by subject for this. Although Transition Town is interested and engaged in many different areas, some of the other organisations are only engaged in cycling or food waste or something like that. So what we were trying to do was to focus on a particular area so that people who had interest in that area could make some input. The downside of that is it means that a group like Transition Town finds that they have to make many separate submissions. But that's, I guess, why that happened. So there's some really interesting things on here, some of which I said I'm fairly clear we're doing something about. Some of which I think we need to go back. Well, I think we need to go back and go through the list and say, have we actually tackled all this? But this is tremendously useful information that you've given us. In terms of action plans, I think we need to look at a variety of ways of doing that that will work differently in different areas. There are some, and there's quite a lot on the list and quite a lot on the council's list that relate to planning. Quite a lot of those depend on the local plan. Quite a lot of them depend on some fairly complex and time-consuming processes that the council has to follow. It's great news that the government isn't going to remove our capability to set our environmental standards. And that can be fed into that process, but it is inevitably a process that is going to take some time. And I guess that frustrates us all, but ultimately, for things like planning, we have to follow the process if we're going to achieve the results in the end. So thank you very much for all your contributions, and thank you very much for coming along tonight and providing that useful feedback. And I think we need to think about ways in which we can improve, ways in which we can make what we have done clearer, and ways in which we can engage more in the details of what we're going to do in the areas where that's going to produce benefits and so on. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. I'm aware that you've had three councillors talk into the ether at you, Julia. Did you sort of want to sort of make any brief comments in response before I invite Councillor Levitt to say what he's got to say?
No, it's good news that you're thinking about that supplementary planning document. That's the one that's really worrying me about missing the boat on that one. And I suppose the only thing, I'd sort of put in is, I mean, I've spent most of my career as a performance manager, and I've actually been a regulator, so I can be a bit harsh, I'm afraid. I'm used to I'm used to looking at how systems and things are working and thinking about it. And I know in Letchworth, we're about to get, and Royston, we've got sustainability, we're going to be sustainability travel towns. And we're also going to have an LSWIP, local cycling and walking plan produced. And I think this really got to think about how do we, it's not my doing this job, fortunately, but actually, looking from the outside, I keep thinking, how do we make those things, not do the job twice? and waste the resources, you know, producing a cycle plan is sustainable. They're such overlapping documents. So when we're talking about cracks and things, I suppose I'm thinking about how do we efficiently get some cycle tracks on the road soon? I've seen so many cycle reports now, you know, over the years, that actually I don't really want to. I know we've got two more reports coming out, but part of me feels like we already know where we want some cycle tracks in Letchworth. I suspect ditto the people of Royston and Hitchin. You know, that's, can we do these reports as efficiently, as quickly as possible, and possibly get a cycle track down somewhere soon? Is that, that's where I'm kind of feeling that we do seem to get stuck in, oh gosh, we're going to have an Elswip this year and we're going to have a sustainable travel town plan. We seem to be always in planning, but at some point it'd be lovely to get out of planning and into delivery. That's just, you know, again, how it feels from the outside. And
yeah, no, that's completely understandable. And I think it's good for us to hear that. And I think Councillor Collins is absolutely in a transport user, or whatever transporty forum-y wording we're using, because I get the two groups confused. See, councillors get confused sometimes too. That's how complex systems can be. But I think Councillor Collins will absolutely take those comments away. And Daniel Washington, who's been doing a lot of the work on the cycle routes, is, in my opinion, absolutely brilliant and very, very, very engaged. And it will be good for him to hear that feedback and work on it as well.
We do talk and we do meet with Daniel, but sometimes it feels like by the time we're told that lots of things that are in Herts County Council's power, particularly around cycling, you know, and then we've got all these reports. We never seem to get beyond reports. And I suppose what I'm saying, can we find a way beyond reports to actually, I'd just love to see a cycle track go, you know, a new cycle track come out of one of these reports. It would be lovely.
I think that's something that a lot of us want to see. And I can see Sam's going to take that away, I think, and do good things. Okay, lovely. So, Councillor Levitt, you've been very patient with me.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Really, just picking up, Sam's picked up on most of the stuff, as has Steve, on some of the stuff I was going to speak about. One's mainly the local plan and the sustainable homes thing. I've been involved in the local plan. It's actually 7 years this week since I first got involved in it. And it was always the intention to pull the sustainable home standards into there. In fact, since we started it, the standards actually changed the name and type as well. So how much change has been through it. But it was always our intention to go for sustainable home standard, as at the time we couldn't do it because we weren't allowed to. But the change in government policy now means you can build it in. So that was always the intention, to have a supplementary planning document or something along there to get the sustainable home standard, which I think was standard 4 we were looking at the time, which is one of the highest, second highest one you could do. So that was always the intention, and that work has always been in progress, as Sam has said. Things have changed, things like the EV charging points. Every single planning application now has a standard clause on there that EV charging points must be part of the development, and that even goes on single homes now. So that's something that's come in and has been a definite change. I think one thing, I take Julia's point that there's an awful lot talked about and not a lot seems to happen sometimes. And I think as Elizabeth said, and Julia both said, it's where the responsibilities lies. When you're trying to work with county council, district council, outside groups, environment agency, before you can get a cycle track or something like that, it's really frustrating. And those have been doing this for, it is so frustrating trying to get things done sometimes where you cross agency. And I'm just wondering, as a thought to take away, not to get into real discussion on tonight, is when we do the overview and scrutiny committee, if we have a specific area we want to look at, we set up a task and finish group, like a focus group, to report back. And I'm wondering if that's something in the future we could pick up on and have a sort of, won't be a task and finish group as such, because that's probably a little bit fun, but some sort of focus group on a particular point that we can all agree is, and instead of trying to spread over a huge number of different subjects, is look at something, yes, we can make a real difference here because it's in our control as a district council, and focus on that. And just, that's just a thought to take away from the future. So if we can put a little bit of focus into something somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, David. I think obviously it's quite enjoyed. I miss scrutiny quite a lot, and I hear what you're saying about task and finish groups and their value, and I am minded to agree. I'm also mindful that officers will absolutely hate me if I say, yes, let's have a focus group on and let's create even more work for you to do, especially right now. But I can see Ruben's making a note, and I think that's something that we can discuss at some point in future. I think it could potentially yield benefits, sort of, and we can get into things in a bit more meat and detail than we're able to in the course of one evening. I can see Councillor Morris has got his hand up. Would you like to make some contributions for me, Gerald?
Yes, thank you, Elizabeth. I think what Julia is more than alluding to, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's really frustrating that we talk about all sorts of interesting things that we can do from the environment, and we don't do too much, as has already been said. We talk and talk and talk, we've got minutes and all the rest of it, but when we look back at what we've achieved, things do unfortunately move at a snail's pace. I mean, we've got our title is a cabinet panel on the environment, which sounds quite impressive, but as I say, we don't seem to make an awful lot of difference. Unfortunately, it's not just environmentally, but it's a general, unfortunately, this is what happens in government generally. It takes a long time to make a difference. It takes a pandemic to make a difference, actually, as we know. The only thing I was suggesting that might help is I wonder if our leader, Martin, could actually come along to one of these meetings, and perhaps he could do his own little presentation of what's going on, and then perhaps the public can ask him questions, because then you really need to get the message right to the top, and he's at the top. So it's just a suggestion, as I say, that Martin, our leader, comes to a meeting, and perhaps the public can ask him some questions in the way that the press asks questions of the government, successfully or unsuccessfully. At least you'd be cutting out some of the middle people and going right to the top. It's just a suggestion. That's it. Thank you.
I hear that. So essentially, we've got a potential float of a leader's environmental question time.
Precisely, yeah.
Okay. I think
it could be interesting. But sorry to interrupt, but at least it would get the message right to the top rather than us talking about it. We do make changes. It is difficult, but unfortunately, it does move slowly.
It does, and it can be. I do know that Martin has attended some of the panels previously, sort of in person when we were in council offices. And I think he sort of does try to watch and catch up on the YouTube channel as well. So he is very much engaged. But I think that sort of direct participation is obviously as well quite valuable.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that was helpful. Thank you, Gerald. Councillor Muir.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It took some time to unmute myself. I have 2 points to bring up. First of all, on cycleways. If the local plan inspector says yes to all the, I think it's 14,100 houses for North Arts, there could be a lot of 106 money that could be taken for cycleways over the years. The other point is Letchworth Garden City Heritage Foundation puts money back into Letchworth from their leases and farming activities. I wonder whether an approach to them to go 50-50 with the District Council on complete cycleways through Letchworth. It would be a good thing to do, to work in partnership. And with their money and our money, we could get enough cycleways in all directions through Letchworth. My other point is planting trees. We all know that the County Council is planting well over 100,000 trees on their land. I wonder whether the District Council could write to all the voluntary organisations to see whether they can take part in planting trees in North Harts. Why I say this, my Rotary Club, Bulldog Rotary Club, I contacted Andrew Mills, and he's allowed us to plant 1,200 trees on some wasteland next to Ival Springs. We've already planted 800. We've got 400 to plant when we're allowed to. And this has been a great venture within our town of Baldock. We've had over 200 volunteers, non-Rotarians, to help planting. We've had about 30 scouts and about 40 to 50 youngsters from the sixth form at Knights Templar School. So I think the district council should take a lead from what Baldock Rotary Club has done and try and get voluntary organisations throughout North Harts to plant the trees. Most of the trees have been free through the Woodland Trust. We've had many standard trees, 8 foot, 9 foot trees donated by various companies. It's been a great adventure, and I think that should be taken forward by other voluntary groups, with the district council earmarking land throughout North Harts that hopefully they own, or talking to farmers to see whether they would allow tree planting on their land as well. Thank you.
No, you're very welcome, Councillor Muir, and I think it's very good the work that you've been involved in with the Rotary and getting the voluntary groups to do stuff. I think we have got quite a comprehensive tree planting policy that might come up later this evening in some of the items that Councillor Jarvis might want to present in more detail, but I'm more than happy to sort of revisit and discuss those sort of topics and issues around biodiversity and rewilding at any point. I can see Ruben's got a hand up. Is it linked to sort of the most recent points that we've been hearing, or can it wait a little bit?
I was just going to very briefly say that Martin Steers-Hanscom chairs an internal implementation group for climate change, and I update him on a monthly basis on this discussion. So he does hear it, but I do accept your point, Councillor Morris, that it wouldn't hurt having him here.
I think Gerald's waving because he wants to specifically come back on that. You can do that very briefly.
That's appreciated. Thank you, Ruben. But there's nothing like facing the public, is there?
No, absolutely.
Understand. You know, it makes a... When we sit in our little huddles, that's one thing. But it affects the public. It's the public.
Sure, absolutely.
And it's the public that we're really ultimately answerable to. That's
indeed
really what it's all about. Thank you.
All right, lovely. Thank you, Gerald. That was very helpful. Councillor Strong.
Yes, thank you. Can I firstly thank the group for the presentation and the documentation that they submitted to us that we had put on our agendas. Very comprehensive, awful lot in there. And I think in a way, I probably also do share your frustration about putting forward lots of ideas and getting knocked back. And you're absolutely right. It's taking those ideas and actually taking them through and getting some of them delivered. And yes, it is a long time, a bit of a long process. But I mean, as I went through the report, and I'll just pick the first one on your list, which is develop and implement a strategy for managing the council's estate so that it encourages wildlife and biodiversity. If you saw at the last full council meeting, the Conservative group, we did put forward a proposal to do something along rewilding. And it was a project that we knew from officers was not being fully funded. And we took it to council to ask in the budget review, could we put money into this? And it was declined by the administration. So there is a time and a place, I know, but great disappointment, I'm sure, not only for us as a Conservative group, because we actually want to see money where we say we want to do good things. I hope that we'll be able to bring that back next year. And I hope the administration will, in fact, agree with us that it's a project which we possibly will talk about a bit later on. But actually, when you haven't got the money in the budget to actually take a new project forward, that's where the first we're going to fail at in the first attempt at trying to implement something. But I'm hoping we're going to talk about rewilding later on in the in the meeting today or tonight.
Excellent. Thank you, Councillor Strong. I absolutely would not use this panel for politicking or sort of discussing budget-led policy making, et cetera, because that's not something that I believe in. Steve, I've seen your hand is currently up.
We seem to be, we had a discussion, moved into a discussion about tree planting, and of course, I mean, Councillor Dewar might have done a lot of good work in terms of getting those trees planted and pulled up. There is, of course, in the budget, which we all discussed last week, a plan for a community tree planting scheme with 10,000 trees to be operated this autumn. And the idea, and there's some work to be done on the details of that, but the idea is that the council will provide the trees and the associated stuff that is needed to plant them, and invite individuals and groups to plant them. Because the thing the council lacks most of in terms of planting large numbers of trees is land to put them on. It does have that site in Baldock that Michael mentioned, but unfortunately there aren't many more of that sort of size. So we can provide the trees, we can provide the things that go with them. What we need to do is find people who will help us to find space and actually to plant the trees and to water them and nurture them while they're small trees until they grow into large trees. So, but hopefully that will get a significant number of trees planted in the district, and that's in addition to the other programs we have to plant the trees on our land where there is some land. So it's going to be in the autumn, but if that's the right time to plant trees, but it was agreed in the council's budget, I think it's back to the week before last. I can talk about wilding as well now, or we can do that later if you like, Elizabeth. Which do you want to do?
Struggling to click on a microphone. Right. I feel that we're kind of using Julia as a frame setter, but we've almost moved away and we're starting to transition into sort of a more discussion around various different ideas that sort of Julia's raised. So maybe it might be appropriate for us to think about the emerging climate change strategy and where we are with that and some of the themes, because I'm picking up in some of the comments that people are making things that might be answerable through what the council's doing. So shall we kind of want to like maybe have a hybrid, more holistic approach as opposed to trying to rigidly box everything, because we don't really deal in boxes very well.
Yes, my only comment there would be is the climate change strategy is quite deliberately a climate change strategy. The intention is there is a biodiversity strategy, but it's very old. There'll also be a new biodiversity strategy. And whereas I accept that there's some overlap between the two, because planting more trees in particular, but also wilding areas has a carbon impact. The reason they're separate is because in the climate change strategy, I want to have something that focuses on reduction of carbon. And in the biodiversity strategy, I want to have something that focuses on increasing biodiversity. And otherwise, we're inclined to get confused as to what objectives we're trying to achieve. So the climate change strategy kind of touches on wilding and tree planting, but from its carbon sequestration point of view, rather than from its biodiversity point of view.
I'm going to start using the space bar again because the mouse is absolutely useless. Okay, in that case, I think we can kind of let's carry on and sort of exhaust the points that people are making in general that have flowed from Julia's presentation. And then we'll take that specific sort of framing of the climate change strategy that Steve's laid out, and we'll have a discussion around that so we can be more focused on those issues. I can see Councillor Bryant's got a question that she wanted to ask.
I did, but now after what you've just said, it may not be the right time for it. Yeah, so I'll come back later.
Depending on what the issue is, it might be appropriate.
Okay. It really followed on from what Councillor Jarvis has said about rewilding, and the issue of rewilding was raised at the recent council meeting. Would Councillor Jarvis please outline what rewilding the council has already done and what is set in train?
Would you like me to do that now?
I think so, because it's slightly separate to the climate change issue, and I think it fits more neatly with the points that Julia has been raising and sort of that taking the ideas that groups have given us and reporting back on what we've done and are doing.
Okay. So across the district, we have 8 large sites that have management plans associated with them. Now there's one of those which is a cemetery, which doesn't have any wilding in it at the moment, but the others all have significant amounts of management of areas. I mean, some of them are recreation grounds and the Great Ashford Park and Norton Common, where there are areas that are managed in different ways, but they all have significant areas that are managed to promote wilding, both in the way that grass is cut and the way other vegetation is maintained. We've then done, and that's been going on for some time, we then have undertaken a review of the wilding opportunities on all the other sites that the council owns, and that comes to at least 30 locations across the district. I say at least 30, but it's some of those 30 are actually multiple locations if they're quite small. And that's a review that was done for us by the Countryside Management Service, by their people with expertise in that area. And then the council's green space management team got involved with some local knowledge about the way in which the sites were built, were managed, and if there was built environment on them and that kind of thing. So they provided some local input. And we have 30 sites as a result of that, where we've identified opportunities for changing their management to introduce more wilding. Of those, 4 were wilded last year. And that mainly consisted of those of changing the grass cutting regime in a way that will encourage the growth of native species. The Countryside Management Service has suggested some ways in which that could be enhanced still further. There's some of them where, because they are sites where the grass has been cut short for many years, it's going to take quite a significant time to see any regrowth of indigenous species naturally. So there are some where the management regime will be modified to actually introduce some more what were indigenous species. So there's 4 sites that were dealt with that last year, and there's another 3 sites to be added to the list this year. There are some of the sites that involve some more significant work, and that has been planned for future years. So we've got, of the 8 large sites, we've got 7 where there's wilding activities going on, and we've added, this year we will add another 7. It's clearly, wilding is a seasonal undertaking. It's essentially the way in which you manage the land between March and October, largely. So it's the thing you do on a year-by-year basis. So this year we will have 14 sites out of a possible 38, and we're in the process of identifying which ones we could add next year. There are some which are easier to add than others, but there's a discussion, an ongoing review also of the way in which the council manages all green space, and one of the objectives of that is to ensure that we can modify our management, green space management strategies, to enhance biodiversity and address some of the questions that we were raised as a result of the inability to cut grass this year in the early part of the year, where people said, actually, it's great to have the grass a bit longer, even when you can cut it. Can we change the way this works? There are obviously some places where that's more difficult. There are some roadside verges which you have to cut for visibility reasons. There are some places where they're used for informal play spaces where you may need to have areas that cut short. So it's a thing that needs to be approached on a site-by-site basis. But there's a lot of work happened, and there's a lot more going on.
Thank you very much. Val, does that answer your question? Are you satisfied with that?
Yes, thank you. I didn't realise so much was going on.
I do enjoy a bit of scrutiny at these panels as well, and it is a good opportunity for us to report back, because I don't think that we're always that good at communicating what we're doing and the successes and the points that we've learned from this group and from dealing with members of the public. I can see Diane Kirch has raised her hand. Do you want to come in on that point, Diane?
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know how to operate the little yellow
hand. That's fine. Don't worry. I can see everything.
Yeah. Just to add to what Steve has said, that's good news that so many different new sites coming, going to be rewilded. Some of you will know, some of you won't, that Sue Lines and I this last year formed a little group called Action for Insects, where we did some survey work on some cut and uncut grass on Waysbrook site. And so I have asked Andrew Mills if he would find us another patch to do some more survey work on this year. So I was wondering, to what extent will you be able to involve external groups like ours? I was thinking particularly of the Letchworth Naturalists. I don't know what their membership is like these days, but our little group, there's eight of us who wasn't there, I think. But we're very happy to go and sort of survey what's there, flowers and insects. So there are plenty. There are other groups as well. There's groups in LALG who identify flowers. That if you want some survey work doing, can you use the external groups? And there's another point I wanted to make was I had a look at this green space management strategy a while ago, and one thing that struck me, Steve said I think that there were eight major sites, for example Orton Head, which have got really comprehensive management plans in place. I understand about that. I've been around wildlife trust and things for a very long time, and I was married to a warden, so I know how the state of these things are run. But one thing that struck me reading that green space management strategy was that there was very little mention of green corridors, half a column, I think. And I think times have changed since that strategy was written, I know. So the importance of wildlife corridors is much more to the fore than it was. So can we bear that in mind? It's very important for the movement, of particularly of insects. There were other things, but I think I'll leave them for now. Thank you very much.
I just replied to that. I mean, yeah, I agree with you. The Green Space Management Strategy was written some years ago. Views have moved on. I think our priorities have changed. So that's one of the reasons why a new strategy is being produced, because we have to have much more focus on what we're producing from a biodiversity point of view. I mean, the work you did on Waysbrook was great. That enabled us to demonstrate, actually, that we've achieved something rather faster than we thought. The larger sites typically have groups often called Friends of Norton Common or Ned Common or whatever. But I think there's a real opportunity to involve groups of all sorts in some of these things, where they can do things that the council can't do. You know, we simply don't have council officers to go and crawl around Waysbrook counting insects. We haven't got anyone who can do that. It's really great that there are local people who are willing to do that. And I think we need to make sure that we encourage that and work with people who are willing to play that sort of role.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. I think this is a useful conversation for us to be having. I can see Councillor Muir's indicated he wants to make some points.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'd like to just come back on my idea to write to local farmers within North Harts to volunteer some of their land for tree planting. And I know the countryside management would help with volunteers. I'd like to have an answer whether these letters could be written to acquire further land for tree planting. That wasn't answered. Thank you very much.
Okay, I don't think we're going to get an answer on that particular point today, but I think it's something that we could take away and get officers to email you internally with a response, if that'll help, Michael.
Thank you.
Okay, lovely. Councillor Collins.
Thanks, Chair. Just to immediately follow on from that point, it's actually something I've been discussing with local farmers, and it may be that trees themselves are not the best things to put into those hedgerows, but there are some opportunities there that we're already looking into with local farmers and discussing at quite length right across the district, actually. So there is some work to be done there, and I'm going to feed that back over to Councillor Jarvis and the joint administration team when, once I've sort of finished playing around with tractors, which I, as you probably know, quite enjoy. Well, the point I was going to make actually followed on from the point made by Diane. Very good point. I just remember in a Hitchin local area committee, I think it was last year, but the chair may correct me that it was 2019 because it's all got very blurred over the last little while. We, the Labour and Lib Dem councillors, voted to give some funding to the North Harts beekeepers and some beekeeping people, if I remember. And I do remember in that meeting, we asked, particularly for my, for my information as well, because I wanted to know, what were the correct plants to be putting in across North Hertfordshire? And could they, as the local beekeepers, advise us as the council as to what sort of plants would suit the Hitchin area, actually? So I was wondering if Steve could sort of give us a little bit of insight on how those organisations could feed into our officers about what plants are being put into those rewilded areas, because it's got to be the right stuff for the right place. I've got no expertise in planting, so and any sorts of plants of any description, so it would be useful, I guess, as a lot of us councillors don't have, aren't great gardeners, it would be good if we could get that information from the experts, and that would be sort of the RHS types and the beekeepers and those like Diane who are involved in insect life and nature. So it would, I think it would be valuable for us to have that information.
Lovely, thank you very much, Sam. Steve, do you want to comment about being insightful, or is that something that you'll develop and grow out?
Well, I mean, I think you know, clearly we get some professional advice, and that's why we got the Countryside Management Service involved, because they have a range of professionals, ecologists and such people. Clearly there can't be an expert in every area, so I think if there's a useful input to be made from local people with particular expertise, then I think that would be really good. And I, as I said in answer to Diane's point, I think we actually do need to set up these sort of groups of local people who can get involved in this sort of thing. There's been quite a lot of volunteer involvement in the management process. I mean, it's all stopped temporarily at the moment. But in the past, there's been quite a lot of volunteer involvement in the management. But I can't see why that shouldn't be extended beyond the, you know, the digging the holes and putting the trees in to the getting involved in deciding what kind of trees go there. So I hope we can develop more of that.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Councillor Morris. You're on mute, Gerald. There you go.
I was unmuted and then muted myself. Sorry about that. I keep bees. Anything that flowers, really. So you get a range of pollen that really starts as early in the season as possible, goes right through to the autumn. You don't want oilseed rape because it produces rubbish honey, but really anything that sequentially flowers and has pollen in it. It's anything is better than nothing. Incidentally, bees do really well in cities, conversely, because people have gardens and because there's such a variety of plants in a city. Whereas if you go into the countryside, it's all monoculture. It's not very good for bees. That's it. Thank you.
There you go. Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. Right, I have got no more hands showing. So before we move on to sort of focus on discussing issues around the climate change strategy, are there any other points that we want to explore that have come out of Julia's presentation, or things that we might want to take forward thinking about the shape of this panel next year? Okay, I am seeing no little blue hands, or Claire's raising a hand. Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of other invited members of the panel who, from various other groups, who haven't spoken. I'm looking at you, Vicky Weir, Thank you very much for my Christmas globe, which I still have. And Suan, and I know they perhaps weren't going to make presentations, but I would be interested to know if they would like to comment.
I think they are absolutely welcome to comment, but just in case maybe that hasn't been clear. Vicky's wagging a finger in the air at me.
Yeah, I'm happy to comment. I think the initiatives that you're talking about sound really good. I'd love to see more of them. I think that the idea of wildlife corridors, biodiversity corridors, is brilliant and should be, you know, looked into more because they're so important. One thing I would say is bees are not the only pollinators.
Flies.
Honeybees in particular. You know, there's lots and lots of different pollinators that benefit from all sorts of different vegetation, but obviously that's a practical point. And I agree that, you know, there's a lot of expertise in bodies like the Countryside Management Service. One thing I would say about tree planting is that the aftercare of the trees is as important as getting them in the ground, especially with the sort of droughts and weather conditions that we're having in the summers. So I think some sort of ongoing management plan is really important. But thank you for hearing me out.
You're absolutely very welcome. It's always a pleasure to hear from you, Vicky. I guess that's sort of my cue again, just to make clear, if anybody at any time in this room, whether you're a councillor, an officer of the council, a member of the public, or representing a particular group, wants to speak, please raise your physical hand or the little blue raise hand thing in the box and I will call you. I can see Sue's waving at me. Yes, Sue.
It was really to follow up. I'm delighted to hear the things which were said this evening about the additional spaces that are going to be rewilded. One of the things which has been on my mind quite a lot are the verges. You know, verges up and down our roads, all around the neighbourhoods, and whether in fact those are going to be mowed as usual or whether these are being included as part of the strategy from here on. I'd be very interested to hear if these have been included in the discussions. Thank you.
Do you want to come back briefly on that, Steve?
And the answer is some of them are and some of them aren't. So the verges are maintained by the district. It gets terribly complicated. The verges are maintained on the district by the district council on behalf of the county council. And they specify a minimum number of cuts, and we currently cut them more than that. That is, there are some verges that have been included in the 30 sites, although most of them aren't verges, a few of them are. There's then a bigger question about what we're going to do about verge management, and that's something that we need to sort out as part of the green space management strategy. What we need to do is to make sure, firstly, that we cut them where there'd be where there's a visibility issue, and secondly, that we get the message across that if the grass is longer on the verges, it's because that's the way it ought to be, rather than just because the council hasn't got around to cutting them. So we've got a really significant communication issue in some places, and that's another area where we need help from people in the district, because we need their help in communicating that actually this is what we should be doing with our verges. We shouldn't be cutting them very short and very neat everywhere. So that's certainly something that people can help with.
Thank you. Now, I know Councillor Collins has raised his hand, but he's spoken quite a lot today, so I'm going to make him wait. Diane, do you want to have a word?
Yeah, just on that point, Sue's point about verges and Steve's follow-on. Sue told me this morning or yesterday she was making some little signposts and had asked Andrew Mills if we could put them on any of the areas that were going to be left uncut. Well, this could apply to verges as well. Something, Sue, you carry, do you want to take over from here and explain? Unmute first.
Yeah, okay. There's a strategy just called No Mow May. I don't know what the rest of the strategy is for the the cutting regimes for the rest of the year, but it's to actually not cut at that particular time in the year so that grasses and flowers have a chance to actually get going, which after our very wet winter, I think everybody can see would be a great idea, because there's no root mass, there's no kind of real sward at the moment. Everything has got trampled and muddied. So if in fact Andrew is up for this idea, I'm prepared to make these signs to actually try to explain very briefly that this isn't lack of care or lack of strategy by the council, but this is actually a thought out idea. So Andrew's away, I think, until the 1st of March. I got a thing back from his email today. So once he's come back to me, I'll know what his views are about this. So I can't do any more until I've heard from him.
And just to add to that, sorry, I'm chipping in straight away. No Mow May is a concept developed by the organisation called Plant Life. It's a big organisation and they do it every year.
Excellent. I do enjoy a good campaign, especially if it comes pre-packaged and we don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's not my portfolio area, but I can see that Steve is taking notes as the relevant person with power to do things.
I did it last year in my own garden. And you sort of, you know, you do a survey and then send back what you found.
Yeah, that's quite exciting. Gilly had her hand up.
Thank you. I'm very heartened to hear of some of the things that have been mentioned this evening. So thank you for all that you're doing in that respect. I wanted to suggest something to you that will be coming to you, details of which, and some of you have already had information on, the Climate and Ecological Emergency Bill that's been proposed as a private member's bill. I have put out information for local authorities to support this bill, and I'm proposing it to you. And I realise the elections might get in the way, but I'm proposing it to you as an absolutely no-cost way of making a powerful intervention in terms of supporting climate and ecological action. So look out for that. Community Engagement tell me they're going to be sending you information about that as well. So I think it can be really powerful, but it's an alliance of different climate bodies, and with enough people and authorities and corporations supporting it, change can happen. That's how the Climate Change Act started, as a private member's bill. So please look out for that. And on the subject of educating the public as to why verges aren't mown, or indeed anything else that's happening within the area in relation to these issues, I make a plea that you are an authority, and as such people will listen to you. So perhaps while we do as much as we can, could you also use your trumpets to tell the truth about what is happening in the climate and ecological emergency and what you're trying to do to address it? And we will definitely be supporting you.
Thank you very much, Julie. I think a number of us had a brief moment when the idea that people listen to their local authorities was needed, but I take the point that we are in a position, every single one of us, and I've said it a number of times here and in meetings elsewhere as well, we're influencers. This is something that we should be utilizing our networks and our platforms to influence people on, and it should be completely separate, in my opinion, from party politics, because party politics should not dictate the climate future of our planet. On the bill, I've had the email, and Steve and I have had sort of discussions offline about sort of what we might do to implement and things we can do. So we're aware, and things are moving on that particular item. And I don't necessarily want to go into too much detail at this moment in time. But thank you very, very much for the work that you've been doing in the background. Thank you for holding us to account and reminding us of the work that we need to do on this climate emergency. And we'll continue working and doing the best that we can. And I expect you to continue nudging us in the right direction when we don't get it quite right. Mm-hmm. Councillor Collins has waited very, very patiently. And I'm also mindful we're coming up to 9 o'clock. So what I'm proposing we do is I'll take Councillor Collins's point, and then I'm going to wrap this general discussion about stuff. and we'll have a break for 5 minutes, and then we can, after the break, get into the climate change strategy. Okay, so Councillor Collins.
I'm pleased you made me wait, Chair, because it's actually given me two more points to make, which is wonderful. Just on the point of the early day motion, the emergency bill, I'm not sure what Elizabeth and Steve have spoken about, but I've had separate briefings on that. It's a great bill, and I'll be urging all of the other people in the administration group to be supporting it and write to all the MPs and people we know for our political parties to do that. And hopefully people in other political parties who I know are represented in this meeting will do the same, because it's a great bill. Going back to something that Councillor, the next two points are sort of interlinked. Going back to something that was mentioned, I love this idea for May. It's great, but I think we can take it a little bit further. Some of you will probably have seen the Don't Be a Tosser signs that are dotted about North Hertfordshire to tell people not to litter. And I think that was a really successful campaign we put together. Certainly the level of litter went down. I'm not sure if it was the weather or the signs, but hey, it worked. I'm just wondering if Councillor Jarvis would consider putting something similar, a North Hearts style of that sort of Corex, Don't Be a Tosser style sign, put that in the verges that we have left to rewild, to explain that to the public that this is, no, we're doing this on purpose and this is why. I think it might be a nice little public information thing. So I love that little idea. And I know the Don't Be a Tosser signs didn't cost a huge amount of money. So I wonder if that's something we're allowed to do. And then just sort of an additional question on the end of that, which is my original point for Councillor Jarvis. Obviously, the sites that we control as North Hearts District Council, we've already started the rewilding projects on. And that's been underway for, well, since the joint administration came into power. I think it was one of the first things we looked at was launching a rewilding project. And that's been ongoing. The work's been great. Why is the county council forcing us to cut the grass so often? And why are they not pursuing rewilding in the way that North Hearts District Council is? I've never really fully understood why the county council has been so resistant to it.
No politics in this house, please, Sam. Steve,
that was a valid question. The county, we actually historically have cut the grass more than the county council required us to in the towns, and that's one of the things that we need to decide how we're going to deal with that in future. Just to deal with the signs, I think the signs are a really great idea, and there are some places where we can do it easily. There's a slight caution in that there are all sorts of complicated rules about what you can put on highway verges. So it may be easier to do on some of the other spaces, but I think, you know, places like Waysbrook, which is a very wide highway verge, I think that's a really good idea, and I think we should definitely do that. The County Council is moving much more slowly. I mean, I got them to start doing this, and they identified, I think, 38 sites in Hertfordshire, most of which were in North Hearts, but it's the places which has the biggest returns are the ones which are on chalk and where you can essentially reinstate chalk grasslands, because you get the best results there. Unfortunately, they then knocked that down to 26, and then there were 8 of those that they couldn't do for some reason. And so it's a bit of a struggle. There is some progress, but given that they have potentially far more sites than the district, far more in North Hertfordshire than the district, it's disappointing, but we are slowly getting them to take some steps in the right direction.
Okay, excellent. Right, in that case then, I think now is possibly a good time for us to take a 5-minute break, and I will ask officers to sort of do the relevant things and put the recording on hold while we do that. And then when we come back a little bit refreshed, we can get into discussions around the climate change strategy if Councillor Jarvis is ready and prepared for that. Yes, good. Okay, William, can you do the necessary with YouTube for me, please?
Sorry about that. Yes, Chair, I'll get that going now.
Thank you. All right, everyone, so we'll see you back here at 9:01. Okay, I'm going to give everyone another couple of seconds just to settle back in and get the screens turned on, etc., etc., and then I guess hand over to William to run a roll call.
I can see all councillors in shot, so I'll go for the roll call now. Councillor Bryant.
Here.
Councillor Collins.
Hello.
Councillor Dennis Harburg.
Here.
Councillor Jarvis.
Yes, I'm here.
Councillor Morris.
Here.
Councillor Muir. You're muted, Councillor Muir.
Present.
Thank you very much. Councillor Strong.
I'm here.
Thank you. Councillor Levitt.
Yeah.
Councillor Rogero Chaka.
Present.
Thank you. And our officers, Ruben Ayavu.
Present.
Georgina Chapman.
Yeah, here.
Thank you. And Daryl Simmons is operating IT for us. And members of the public in no particular order. Annie Sander. Thank you. Jilly Chegwin?
Yes.
Glenda Dixon? John Webb? Julia Sananda?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Nikki Clark?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue Lines?
Yes, I'm here.
And Vicky Weir?
Yes, I'm here. Wire, but I'm here.
Sorry about that.
That's fine.
Thank you very much, Chair. That's everybody.
Lovely. Thank you very much, William. So the next item I have is discussion led by Chair. I'm not really going to lead the discussion because I think I'd prefer for others to lead it themselves organically. What I'd like us to look into and to discuss is the emerging climate change strategy, which Steve sort of alluded to earlier in the meeting and has been included in the papers. And some members might have seen sort of various versions of as it's come through in its evolution. And given sort of the role of this cabinet panel in dealing with the environment and climate change, I think it's important that we do maybe a little bit of internal informal sort of scrutiny and understanding and exploration of the things that are in there, and take this opportunity to pick up some of the points that we've heard over the course of the last 2 years of running these sessions and feed those in if they need to be fed in, if we don't think that they've been adequately captured in what Steve's put together. So I'm going to shut up and I'm going to let Steve do a sort of very comprehensive but brief presentation of the strategy for you, and then we can sort of move into discussion around it. Okay.
Okay, Ruben, did you have some slides you wanted to show on this?
Take yourself off mute, Ruben. Yes, I do.
Yes. So if you can do that, and then I will come in once we've done that.
Yeah. Right, there we go. There's a real advantage to going last because lots of people have said things you've already said in your presentation. So I'll be very brief. But the remit of this presentation is just to go very quickly through what we've talked about in the last year. And I'll move on to my next slide. Let's do that. Oh, go back one. Sorry. What we did last year, the strategy itself, which Steve will pick up on, and then we'll talk very briefly about the actions we've achieved and the proposed actions for the coming period, which will be 2021 to 2026. As we said earlier, these are the things that we talked about in the last civic year, and I take on board the point about pulling together the ideas that the public have had around those ideas, in addition to those that we heard from Andrew Mills and Daniel Washington and Chloe Hipwood around those particular topics, and having an outcome report which will feed into next year's. I know Councillor Strong wants to talk about water supply and disposal, particularly in the Purton area, so that's going to be on there as well. And also the air quality, which we've not been able to do this time, but they will all feed in. So I briefly wanted to talk about the wider partnership works. I think people have quite rightly said we seem to be working very slowly, but we have been doing some work in the background. So the first point is there is something called, and I mentioned this earlier, the Hertfordshire Climate Change and Sustainability Partnership, which is a bit of a mouthful. So it's HSCCSP. And it is the 10 districts and the local enterprise partnership are working on the delivery of county-wide themes on transport, biodiversity, water and carbon reduction. They chose these ones because they felt these were the most significant. There's a lot more paperwork involved, but just to let you know that we at North Hertfordshire are leading on the subgroup for biodiversity. So we are looking at presenting a baseline so that we can assess the whole of the land parcels in the all of the districts and across the county. So it feeds into the biodiversity net gain work that's coming through the Environment Bill and those sorts of things. Affinity Water, I know a lot of you are very interested in that sort of thing. And I just wanted to say that we have had very good conversations with those people there, to the extent that they are now talking about arranging meetings with the Environment Agency, Revival and our green space manager to talk about river restoration work and what can be done with available funding. They're talking to other partners, Settle and Garden City Homes, and they are doing in April a Save Our Streams demand campaign, which we are going to be heavily involved in as well. And then Annie Sander will know, obviously, that we've been talking to Plastic Free Letchworth and wider to make sure that, you know, to ensure the district is plastic free where we can, and that is ongoing. That's a very quick shot of where the partnership sits. So it goes up to the leader group. It talks to lots of different partnerships. There's lots of partnership work going on, and we're trying to link this up so we are doing things that make sense. There's no point having an electric vehicle strategy if you then go past our borders and you just can't go anywhere. So that's that. So our achievements, they break down to three topics: reducing our carbon footprint, leadership across the district, and partnership working. I think the completed actions is a paper that was sent and was attached to this, but I will send it round to the public participants as well if they didn't have a chance to see it. And I'll pick out some highlights, but not everything, because we'll be here all night. But we have looked at our own estates and looked at where we can make those energy efficiency measures. We're looking at possibilities in renewable energy to reduce our footprint. We are going to track our energy efficient measures. We are looking at our emissions from our vehicle fleet, our grey fleet, the carbon emissions from commuting, which obviously has not been much during the pandemic. Our water and waste will be assessed, and we'll do similar reports to look where we can make those reductions. We have made the switch to renewable energy sources for our own buildings. And we've worked with partners to reduce their plastic, single-use plastics. For example, the leisure centres have got rid of the plastic overshoes and plastic cutlery in their areas. We have made changes to our taxi and licensing policy, so there's a no idling point system to enforce drivers who don't comply with that. And I think Sam might have talked about this earlier. We've, in our own fleet, we've replaced our community safety vehicles with ultra low emission vehicles. So when the contracts come up for the next vehicles, we'll be looking to do that sort of thing. I'll pick up that in the achievements. And then we are looking at, I think Daniel talked about the Sustainable North Hertfordshire programme, which is talking about developing and supporting policies that encourage electric vehicle use and other clean air initiatives. So that was that one. Then I think we'll get to this bit, because I think this will be where the meat of the conversation is. So in light of national legislation around the reduction of greenhouse gases by 2030 to 100%, and then the announcement in December of making emissions down by 68% by 2030, we've looked to refresh our climate change strategy. we have some proposed actions which I'll run through, and then I've put these items here at the bottom, which we have picked up today, but we would look to work. We can't do this by ourselves, so we are looking to work with local groups. So absolutely, we want to talk to the beekeepers and the friends of groups and all those other groups as well. But this panel is a good place to identify those achievable goals between us. And then we can set the environment panel topics and possibly the format of how this group works in the future. So very briefly, let's just stop sharing because that's me done. But the bit I wanted to pick up with you is the proposed actions that will go in the strategy for 2021 to 2026. And again, they break down into three headings. One is taking action, which is reducing the council's carbon emissions. Second is enabling carbon savings, which is ensuring our policy enables citizens and businesses to reduce their emissions. And the third one is inspiring the community, so encouraging the community and business to take action, to go further and faster, which I think is a topic that we have covered here, in reducing carbon emissions. So the sorts of things we're looking at, we are going to look at where possible, council buildings will be fueled by renewable electricity. We will ensure that no buildings don't use gas-fired systems. We'll look at heat pumps. We'll look at improving our building energy management systems to reduce waste. You know, that talking about increasing insulation and conducting light savers so we can make those savings in energy outputs. We will look at putting in green clauses in our leases and licenses for our properties. So again, we're encouraging those tenants to consider the whole life of a building, not just, you know, the quick wins. We will explore and progress on-site generation of electricity from solar or wind. And we will look at those opportunities where we can sustainably heat our swimming pools, which I think is one of our big emitters. In terms of transport, we will, as I said earlier, we will continue to replace all our future operational vehicles with those ultra low and then move to transition to zero emission vehicles as the leases come up. We will look very closely at how we commute, both for staff and councillors, because we've seen that we can do things via Zoom and we don't have to travel all over the district. We'll explore those opportunities for low emission refuse freighters. In terms of taking action, we want to quantify how much land, as Steve said earlier, we want to quantify how much land we need to plant to offset at least 5% of our carbon emissions. And if we can do more, brilliant, if that's feasible. We'll seek to retain and preserve the scrubland and the woodland edges to protect the trees. We'll try and institute where we can a once a year lift and cut and lift regime for our grass verges. We will create more wildflower areas across the district, and we'll seek to strengthen our hedgerows and connect them to fragmented habitats. In terms of, I've talked about Sustainable North Hart, so I won't do that again. And we've talked about taxis as well. In terms of planning, we will look to ensure that our master plans are designed around streets for active travel and not for roads. We'll try to deliver walkable neighbourhoods where we can. I think Julia talked about SPDs, and the planning team, Tom, they are looking at exploring where they can encourage on-site carbon sequestration for new developments. We want to introduce a standard with an SPD, and I think Sam picked this up earlier about passive house or similar for new developments, and making sure these buildings are really efficient. And where we can reduce carbon emissions adaptation and mitigate against climate change. We'll also signpost residents to the retrofitting and insulation and heating to buildings that are in existence now. We'll work more closely with the Hearts Waste Partnership to look about how we can use anaerobic digestion to deal with food waste from 2024. And I think I'm going to stop there, but I will finish on the one encouraging support community tree planting initiatives. Thank you, Chair. Happy to take questions. I'm sure Steve will chip in for the things I've missed.
Thank you very much, Reuben. I asked for comprehensive brevity. I got comprehensive.
So I guess that's
why. No, I think it's very good. I think it's almost impossible to be brief on these issues. So with great regret, I'm going to reluctantly ask Steve, do you have anything to add on your strategy? Do you want to build any additional points in?
Well, I think Reuben's covered it pretty comprehensively, but I mean, the fundamental issue is that the council has three things it needs to do. It's got to put its own house in order in terms of getting itself to zero carbon, or net zero anyway. It's got an important role to play, particularly in the area of its planning policies, but there are other areas as well where the decisions we make have an impact on the carbon emissions of people across the district. And then there's Ruben mentioned, there's perhaps the most significant, but also the hardest, which is stuff that we can't directly do or even directly influence, but where we can encourage people to change their behaviour in ways that go well beyond what the council directly controls or influences. And partly we do that by setting examples, partly we do that by communicating, partly we do it by working with groups in the community. And Ruben's been through a set of actions. I mean, I have some things that I'd like to see us do, particularly in that latter area. There are some things that have been done in other parts of the country where councils have set up the ability for people to benchmark their own household carbon emissions against typical people in the area, people in the rest of the country, that kind of thing. So people can see how they're doing and be encouraged to do better on that basis. And I think that that's one way in which we can build community enthusiasm for going in this direction. And that's what we need to do. There was someone said earlier when we were talking about biodiversity that we kind of had a leadership role. And we do have a leadership role, but not everyone is necessarily going to follow us. In some cases, there are other organisations that can provide a more effective connection with some parts of the community, and we need to work with those where that is the case. I think the other thing that is in the strategy that Ruben didn't mention is that I want to see us set out a roadmap, particularly in terms of the council's own carbon emissions. I want us to set out a roadmap which shows where we start, and we're almost completed a lot of work on establishing just what council's emissions are. We've done all the buildings, the vehicles are nearly all done, and then there's some ancillary bits and pieces. So if you're going to have a target to get to somewhere, which is net zero, you need to know where you're starting from. We then need to set ourselves out a series of targets along the way to ensure that we hit zero by our target date. And what I want us to do is to review our progress on that. It won't turn out the way we expect. There will be things that go better and things that go worse. There will be things that we can do in the future, which we perhaps don't know about and can't do at the moment. So it's not a roadmap that won't change, but we need to set out a roadmap as to how we're going to get to where we want to be. And I wanted to revise the strategy, to take account of all the things we've learned, lots of which have come from these meetings, so there are some that come from elsewhere, a better understanding of what others are doing, and to set out some clearer targets and goals, and to make it absolutely clear that there are these three ways in which the council needs to operate in terms of addressing the climate emergency. So there will be a strategy, the strategy is in the papers. There are two appendices, one of which is a list of actions, and I believe that they're not in the papers at the moment, and there will be a list of achievements. So hopefully as the years pass, the list of achievements will get longer and the list of outstanding actions will get shorter. And no doubt we'll review the base strategy as well. But essentially that's where we are. I don't make any claims that it's perfect. I think it's a substantial step forward from the last time we did it a year ago, because we understand a lot more about where we are and what we need to do. There will be future reviews because we all have to learn about, we all know where we want to get to. We are all learning about how we can get there. And in particular, how we can take the majority of the population who are supportive, but don't spend all day thinking about this, how we can take them with us to achieve the goals that we're setting, because that's what we need to do. At that point, I'll stop.
Thank you very much, Steve. I think this is a really important piece of work, and it's potentially one, in my view, one of the most important things that we as a cabinet panel have done. A million years ago, when we first set up this panel, one of my visions was that we could use this as a forum for policy development and to deliver real meaningful change. This strategy that Steve has got and has picked up a number of these ideas and that we've now got the opportunity of scrutinizing and working through together, it's kind of that's kind of what I wanted us to be achieving. That was one of my goals for this group. So I really want to see some good debate and discussion around these points. If there's something that Steve and Ruben have missed, if there's something that's unclear before this item sort of progresses and becomes an established NHDC policy, I want to make sure that we've picked up on that. So to that end, I will expect a very stellar first contribution from Councillor Morris.
Thank you, Elizabeth. They're about stellar. Just a couple of things. Ruben, you kicked off, one of your bullets was recovery from a pandemic. I hope you're not planning for more pandemics, Ruben, but recovery from the pandemic will do just fine for me. Just a little detail. Another bullet further on, reduce our carbon footprint. Steve, again, this is a sort of a general question. I don't know who can answer it. Steve mentioned zero carbon. I thought we were going for carbon neutral because I'd have thought zero carbon was an impossibility. Before anybody wants to answer that one, I'm just curious. Presumably, we don't know how much carbon we produce in the district anyway. And I know that we have made reductions, obviously quite small compared to what needs to be achieved over the next few years. But how will we actually be able to measure whether we are actually carbon neutral eventually? Presumably, Ruben, you can't answer that. I just wonder if anybody could answer that. Thank you.
There are some, there's two parts to that. There's the council's bit, and that we can measure. And that's what we're doing. We're measuring where we are, and we can repeat that measurement. In terms of the district as a whole, I mean, essentially, the government has ways of estimating this. They're probably not right, but they're, as you say, it's impossible to measure completely. But there are certainly ways of estimating it, and we will use those. I mean, in terms of zero, net zero, and carbon neutral, so yes, it's so the difference between carbon neutral and net zero is a bit esoteric. It depends how you count third-party emissions. Which tends to get a bit complicated. There's probably some of the people on this call can talk about this in more detail than I can. But they're similar, but not exactly the same. But you know, as we said, we are likely to, certainly at the council level, we're likely to rely on some level of offsetting. But the objective is we only offset that with carbon sequestration that we provide. We're not going to be in the business of essentially buying carbon offsets elsewhere. Across the district as a whole, actually, that offsetting is probably easier. There's a lot of land in the district. But as you said, you know, measuring that is complicated. So, yeah, some of this stuff isn't easy.
I think Vicky's got the answer.
All right. Vicky is waving. Do you want to come in on this particular point, Vicky?
Am I permitted to? But okay.
You can do. I like this to be informal, and I think we've had some really valuable contributions from community members, more okay. So sometimes than others.
Thank you. I think it sounds really good what you're saying. I just have come across very recently a fund that the government has set up called the Natural Environment Investment Readiness Fund. Which is £10 million to provide grants to environmental groups, local authorities, businesses and other organisations to help them develop nature projects in England to a point where they can attract private investment for carbon sequestration. So if that's something that you're probably already aware of it, but if you're not, it's... funded on behalf of DEFRA through the Environment Agency. So that looks like something that could really be helpful to getting some of the carbon sinks that you're planning off the ground. But anyway, yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm sure Steve will make a note of that, and officers will take that away to deal with. Sam.
Yeah, being the geeky guy who's read all the documents before the meeting as ever and likes the technical details. Going through the agenda item 8, you'll probably see the NHDC climate change strategy 21 to 26. On page 6 of that document, there's a section headlined objectives. And the third bullet point down is achieve a net zero carbon district by 2050. I'm pretty certain an officer probably wrote that because that's in line with the government's agenda. However, having spoken with Steve Jarvis about this and having worked in sort of my life outside council business, I think we should be aiming for something a bit more ambitious. I mean, I'd like to see 2030. One of my biggest clients, Formula One, is working towards 2030. I think that's incredibly ambitious, but I mean, maybe something between like 2035 and 2042 would be a more achievable goal for us to make the whole of North Hertfordshire a carbon zero district by that point. And then on the next page, my tablet's gone to its login screen, which it does every 30 seconds. I believe there is a section where there's another sort of something alluding to meeting the national objective of 2050. I don't personally believe the national objective of 2050 is really acceptable, and we as North Arts should really be pushing for a much earlier objective to be carbon neutral, carbon zero, call it what you want. 2050 is unacceptable. We need to be looking towards somewhere between 2030 and 2042, in my opinion. And I think that's a change that I think it would be nice to make in this document before it goes to overview and scrutiny to cabinet or wherever it goes next.
Thank you very much. I was nodding along to a number of the points that you made. And I think, Steve, do you want to respond to any of Sam's comments?
Yes, I mean, I think he's right in that there needs to be a more ambitious target than 2050. I mean, I think the country needs a more ambitious target than 2050. I mean, I think we could set a target that was a bit more ambitious than the government is setting. I think we need to recognise that if we're serious about achieving it, our capability to do that in the surrounding bits of Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire and Cambridgeshire are on board with that as well is going to be kind of limited because people don't live their lives according to local government boundaries. But I think it'd be quite reasonable to set a more ambitious target than the government. But I agree that 2030 sounds ambitious even for Formula One. And we're not Formula One. We have a much more complex operation and about a million times less money. And they're not going to achieve 2030 anyway. So let's see if we can come up with something that is more ambitious than the government, but that we might manage to achieve, even if the rest of the world around us is not.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I think that's in a Formula One chat for tonight. Councillor Levitt.
Thank you. No mentions of Formula One. Targets, politics, etc. aside, there's only one way you're going to achieve this, and Steve actually mentioned it in it earlier, and that is taking people with us. You're not going to achieve any of this if you don't take people with us, and I think that's really important for this panel, for the council, for us as individuals as well, if we're going to ever achieve anything, is to make sure we get people on side and they understand why we're doing it. And just give an example of the sort of challenge you face is that there's a lot of development going on in town centres now, office blocks being converted into flats, bringing town centres into different use, bringing people into the town centres to make them more sustainable. And then we get huge objections to the planning application because there's no car parking. We appeal and then we lose the appeal because... And as the planning people say, it's actually a sustainable location. You don't need parking. And that's just an example of the sort of thing you've got to think about, the thing you've got to overcome is. It's sort of supply and demand. People will say, well, you have to have the parking because there's no public transport. there's no proper bus routes and everything. Well, there's never going to be stuff like that if you don't have the demand for it. And it's what way round do you do it? And it's a lot of thinking about this. And it is taking people with you. It is about thinking about what things are going to develop in the future. You know, there's two ways of marketing a product, as it were, and climate change is in a way is a product. You've got the Apple method where you create a product and make everybody want it, or you find a demand for something and you might not know what it is. And this pandemic's been quite a good one because people are stuck at home. How do they meet and everything? Look at the way things like Zoom and other conferencing systems and that are developed to fulfill a need. So it is really important that we do take people with us and we do what people want. Otherwise, it's never going to happen.
Thank you very much, David. I think that is a valid point. It's something that we've said a number of times and I've been very conscious of in my area as well. Nikki, did you raise a hand? Did you want to sort of come in off the back of David's contribution?
Yes, thank you. I did notice right at the beginning when Ruben was going through actions that have not made it through yet, one of them was about posters and communication and that sort of thing. And I think if we are going to take people with us, we've got to tell them why we're doing all these things rather than just telling them with the good things that we're doing. The Climate UK Assembly, one of the things that came out of that was the people that said, if we'd have known about this, we would have supported this so much earlier. And it's that telling, as Gilly said, telling people the background. It may be scary, but they need to know in order to understand why we're making all these suggestions and changes. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And I think I agree 100% with that. Councillor Bryant.
Thank you. Just going back to what Councillor Collins said about the target dates, and in many ways Councillor Jarvis has actually covered part of this. But it's a weekend, I listened to a radio programme to explain to me, but don't ask me to explain to you, why by actually having closer target dates, for instance 2030, the plans for those to meet that target date actually negates the plans that should be made for actually having longer targets. And I realise this is very, very complicated, and I'm sure that this is in Councillor Jarvis's plans, but I think we just got to be very careful about these dates that we're going to have in there and if we're going to put interim dates and make sure we thought it through.
Okay, thank you very much, Val. Julia.
Yeah, the zero carbon target for an HTC, I assume that means we're all going to be sort of heading towards zero carbon. Because one of the biggest challenges I think we have is actually getting our houses, you know, to be low carbon, particularly in Letchworth, when we're sort of having these continual discussions, you know, not getting anywhere with the Heritage Foundation about how we can effectively insulate them. So it'd be lovely if the council can sort of work with us, you know, and the housing, you know, associations as well, who own so much of the stock, to try and find a way forward. Because it's not actually the residents don't want to do it, it's just that we can't ever get a way forward agreed. And I know Settle, as they are now, had big discussions with the Heritage Foundation and lots of discussions and nothing got resolved. But the housing stock, the existing housing stock, is going to be one of our biggest issues.
Yeah. Okay. We've got lots of points and stuff and feedback flying around. Steve, do you want to come in and summarise on any of these points yet?
Yes. I mean, Julia makes a very good point in that we talk a lot about what we're going to do about planning policies for new housing. Even if all the houses that are in the local plan are built and then that number built again, the majority of the houses in North Harts are those that are here now. And retrofitting those is a challenge. There is no doubt about that. There will be some where it's a relatively straightforward technical issue to address, and the question of who pays for it. And there will be some where it's actually a real technical problem as well. There are clearly things that are going to drive that in terms of allowing that sector of the population who have the resources to do it, to essentially offset their future spending on energy to spend now on insulation. There are some things that we can do about that at the margins, but some of those probably depend upon national initiatives. There are certainly things we can do in terms of talking to landlords that have large numbers of houses about what we can do to help them with that. But there's clearly a significant amount of money. And the thing about social landlords is they offer housing at affordable rents because they don't make much profit out of it. So they don't accumulate a lot of capital that can be used for improving the stock. So, yeah, Julia, you're absolutely right. That question about what we do about the existing housing stock is one of the big challenges. I've been to a number of events where people have talked about what the problem is. Some of them have talked about what the technical solution is, how you turn a sort of a conventionally built house with what have been normal levels of insulation into somewhere that is capable of becoming a zero carbon house. But the issues are around about how you enable people to do that, how you pay for it, how you actually make it happen rather than the technical ones. But yes, that's hard. I guess one of the things we need to do is to stop making the problem any worse, and as a first step, and that's where if we can require zero carbon houses to be built, then that stops the problem getting any worse. Although there's an important issue about construction. You know, constructing a new house has a carbon impact which is worth several years of its occupation in terms of a conventional house. It varies a lot depending whether it's built from timber or whether it's built from concrete. So there are things we need to press in terms of construction techniques. It's important where we build them. You know, if we build a house in an inaccessible location, even if the house itself is a zero carbon house and you don't require any energy any carbon energy to heat it, if the people who live there drive every time they go somewhere, then they're not going to lead zero carbon lives. And once you've built those houses in a place where people can't get to other than by driving, it's then an enormous issue to change that. So there is a big piece of this that's relating to what we do with planning. There were some other issues raised as well, and I'm desperately trying to remember what the other ones were. About the targets. I mean, so there are two targets. There is one about the council as an organisation achieving carbon neutrality. And of course, if every organisation could do that by 2030, that would get the district a substantial way towards it. What we've been discussing is the longer term target of how we enable the entire district. And that gets us potentially into all sorts of discussions about, you know, do we mean scope 3 emissions? So when the council buys a refuse freighter that's perhaps made in Germany, so how do we count the emissions for that? So we're into quite a lot of complexity, and that's one of the reasons why we're not going to get it done tomorrow. I think in terms of communications, if he's actually right, we do need to explain why we're doing it. I think there's been a substantial change in terms of people's willingness to accept that it needs to be done. Notwithstanding, that probably hasn't got the sort of prominence in their mind that it had a bit over a year ago, because there have been shorter term issues. But I think that, you know, the climate emergency movement in total had a big impact in terms of convincing people that something needed to be done. What we've got to do now is convince them that they've got to play a part in that and explain to them how they can do it. Councillor Levitt talked about the issues around car parking, and there's the old issue of the carrot versus the stick. If people don't have any alternative but to drive, then if we take the parking spaces away, they'll park on the pavement or the road. We need to think about how we can help them to live their lives in lower carbon ways. And that's a combination of incentives to do the right thing with disincentives for doing the wrong thing.
Thank you. Okay. During Steve's sort of feedback, I saw Vicky's hand pop up. So I'm going to take Vicky and then I'll go to my blue hands that I've got raised.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It was just a question on what is the procedure? What's the mechanism for trying to influence the change that you can't actually do yourself? So we've got the, you know, getting people on side, and I understand that there's, you know, ways that the council can communicate. But what about, for instance, working with the county council and central government to, you know, bring funding on side for retrofitting, you know, energy into insulation into homes and things like that, and also community transport, which would obviously go some way to persuading people out of their cars.
I mean, the Hertfordshire Climate Change and Sustainability Partnership, which Rita mentioned, is an attempt to work together across Hertfordshire on that, because these issues don't end at any district boundary and there's a limit to what we can achieve on our own. So that's an attempt to make sure that we work together across Hertfordshire with all the 10 districts and boroughs and the county council. And there are clearly some things that we can do at that level. We've talked about some relatively simple things. Cambridgeshire is providing a solar energy scheme, a PV energy scheme, enabling householders to buy into that more cheaply than they could otherwise. We're talking about the potential for Hertfordshire to do things like that. We're working together to produce some quick wins. And there's clearly some things where we are going to have to influence government, and we can do that more effectively as 10 districts and one county than we are as one district. So that is very important. You know, this is not a problem that North Hearts can solve on its own. It's a problem which North Hearts can make a real effort in solving. We can provide some leadership to the people who live here. We can try and push some of our neighbours along and make them do it faster than they might otherwise. But ultimately, we can't do it as a district without quite a lot of activity outside the district by others that we can only influence.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really important, it's a really frustrating point, but it's a really important point for us to remember. We're dealing with that sort of classic spheres of control, spheres of influence, et cetera, type model. So I think when we're looking at the strategy, what we need to do is sort of bear in mind that bigger picture and that bigger ideal that we all want, but then zero in on what we can actually do and what we are able to achieve realistically. And I think what I'd like us to question is, have we got in this strategy, have we captured the most effective points that we can influence, that we can change, and that we can actually affect real change on? I've got some councillor colleagues who have been waiting most patiently. I'm going to take them in the order that they popped up, which is Councillor Morris, then Councillor Collins, and then Councillor Levitt. So, Gerald.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Just very briefly, as I normally am, my cynical view of the world. When you're putting together target dates for things, whatever it happens to be, in my view, you're better off to have short dates rather than long dates. Governments always miss dates, all the way around down to district councils, talking about the local plan, dates are always missed. So if you have a short date, you're probably going to miss it, but it'll be a lot better than the long date, which you'll miss also. That's my view of dates. The other point is about how we change attitudes. I mean, obviously I was brought up in an age where nobody knew anything about the environment. It was an infinite resource. I assume, and I don't know, I assume that kids are taught this in school so that when they get to my age, they really, really do care about the environment. To me, that's how you make a difference. I assume, as I say, that that's already done, that it is drummed into kids at school. That's my points. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And I think that's sort of something that we've picked up on specifically in the waste team, and we're working on an education package and programme there. And I'm sure that that's something that Steve will bear in mind. I'm conscious of time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the questions that I've got sort of currently sitting there. I've seen that Councillor Strong's also raised her hand, so she's on my list. And if you could, if you need at any point to respond to anyone that's spoken, Steve, just let me know and come straight in and respond to the points briefly. So next on my list, I have Councillor Collins.
Thanks, Chair. It's just going back to the point that Julius Ananda said, and actually something you were just saying, what the power of the council is. We've heard about the sort of the homes operated by Settle and North Hearts Homes, or they used to be Garden Cottage and also the Heritage Foundation. But we as North Hearts District Council, we're responsible for some of the social housing. We put money into that. We look after those that housing element. And this is a genuine question. I do not know what our ability is to set minimum standards for social housing in North Hertfordshire. Because if we can set minimum standards for retrofitting social housing to meet minimum environmental requirements, BREEAM actually have some standards for that, then is that something we as North Hearts District Council could introduce? Because if we could, that would be really effective and really good thing to do.
That's a direct question, Steve. I think
clearly we could in terms of new housing. There are some mechanisms in terms of the relationship with Settle that remain from when the council housing was originally sold to Settle, that generate certain amounts of money that can be spent in various ways, of which the council has some input. It's a little complicated, and I'm not sure I have understood it, but if I did, I've forgotten part of it. So there is certainly some potential influence there. I don't think that the council can get in. The council has certain nomination rights with the housing associations. I don't think we want to get into the business and say we wouldn't nominate anyone to a provider who didn't meet the right standards, because we actually do need to provide, ensure that people have somewhere to live. I think it's something where the most effective thing we can do is to work with those social housing providers to help them in the lengthy process. It will be a lengthy process of resolving this issue. We need to sort out how that's going to be funded. So I think we have a lobbying and supporting role rather than a directing and doing role, realistically.
Okay, thank you very much. Sue's just raised her hand. Sue, is it on this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's slightly going back. It's really referring back to the Heritage Foundation and not knowing what kind of relationship NHDC enjoys in terms of actually lobbying on precisely these points to bring them up to the same standards that obviously we as a nation should be aspiring to and should be actually heading towards. But with the kind of, what do we call them? I've forgotten the name of the principles, the design principles. Most of us are actually shackled into actually living in houses which are very substandard. So what power do you as councillors have? That's my question.
Well, I think we have the capability to lobby. Clearly there's a working relationship with the Heritage Foundation, which I think most of the time is very constructive. I think there have been odd occasions over the years when it maybe has been less constructive. But we're not in the position where we can tell the Heritage Foundation what to do. We can ask them, we can persuade them, we can talk to them about what they should be doing. But we're not in a position where we can tell them any more than we are in a position that we can tell most other property owners. I mean, there are clearly some minimum standards that the government sets, and the government sets rules about when those standards must be met. You know, if you renovate a house, it has to meet current standards. But if you don't change it, then the law doesn't require you to change it just to meet those standards. So there are some legal minima, if you like, which we probably have a role in enforcing, but we don't set. So I think it comes back to the question that the most significant impact we can have is to make sure that we influence the Heritage Foundation to do the right thing. And I think that applies. We've got lots of people we've got to influence, and part of that is about talking to them about that, and partly it's about setting an example.
Okay, so essentially we're in that classic very difficult position of we have to follow the rules and the frameworks that have been set by other authorities and other powers, and unless we can successfully lobby for legislative change, it makes our lives as a district council really, really difficult in achieving the things that we really want to do and to do the right thing. It's the classic local government versus central government fudge, and it's frustrating. But I think what we can do as members, each and every one, when we come against these problems, is challenge ourselves and ask the difficult questions, go, how far can we push? Is this a fight that we want to start exploring? Can we lobby more effectively than what we're already doing? Glenda's had her hand up, and I'm worried that she's going to get arm ache. Do you want to come in, Glenda? I think your headset might not be cooperating with the Zoom. I've got no sound coming through. No, it's still not working. Do you want to try taking the auxiliary cable out and plugging it back in again?
Is it working now then?
It's working now, yeah.
All right, okay. Basically, when you were talking about regulations, I was wondering who does the building regs? Is that done by the government or is that done by local authority? Because each time anybody, as you've already said, renovates their house in any way, they have to comply with local regulations or with building regs. So if you set them at a high level, then if you have the power to do that, then they would automatically, every time that they were renovated or redone or anybody built an extension, you would get an improved standard.
That's set nationally. The council has a role in enforcing them, but the council doesn't decide what they are.
Yeah. Frustrating. Local government trying to do the right thing for residents versus central government not really understanding local issues. What are we going to do? David can't answer that question, but has another point to raise for me.
Actually, I can answer that question. That's why I was waiting to come in, because Sam actually spoke and Julie said it. This house behind me is a 1920s Letchworth Garden City house, built with solid walls with no insulation, no damp course either. It used to belong to North Harts District Council. Then it went to North Harts Homes, and it's now home by Settle, and I've lived in here for 35 years. About 10 years ago, Julie may remember, North Harts District Council, North Harts Homes as it was at the time, and the District Council did joint projects on looking at retrofitting insulation to old houses, particularly in the Garden City. They did several experiments, some were internal lagging, some were extra bits, some houses up on Ickmield Way had external cladding added to them, on the pebble dash type that I've got. And I did an experiment here myself as well. At the time I was involved in the building industry, and I upstairs on the landing and three bedrooms, which have been done over a number of years, all the old plaster was stripped off, battens were put to the wall, insulation material, really high efficiency insulation material was put in, then the walls overboarded, and it's made a huge difference to those rooms and the heating bills in general. I went through all sorts of hoops to get it done. There was building regs to comply with. I live in a conservation area, so we had conservation area stuff. We had things because I was a tenant, so I had to get permission from the housing association. It can be overcome. It wasn't easy. It was really, really difficult. It wasn't that cheap. I ended up paying for the lot and having some of the stuff donated. But it does make a difference. But as others have said, that regulations don't make it easy.
Now, can I just add on to that? Because I was the first chairman of North Harts Homes when we set up and the council sold all the council housing properties to North Harts Homes. And one of the biggest reasons the council did it was because the property portfolio included 1,800 what were described as defective dwellings. And the reason they were classified like that was because they didn't meet the basic insulation. And the council had no money to be able to actually put in programmes of work to bring those houses up to the housing regulations that exist. So part of going to a housing association where you can borrow money from banks, it was a surreal experience, I have to say, borrowing 100 million so that we could, the new company could do all those changes to the houses. And if you look around the district, you can very easily tell which are the North Harts Homes now settled houses, because they all had new roofs put on them and new insulation put in. The defective dwellings, the tenants had the options of whether they wanted to knock down and rebuild the estates, or they were brick clad and the insulation put in. Windows was something actually the district council had done, because they'd realised that double glazed windows is probably the first thing you try and do in your house if you're trying to keep the warm air in. So quite a lot of the properties had double glazed windows, but then they went around and did a lot of work putting in new doors, changing windows, and also changing central heating systems, because a lot of the properties still had back boilers downstairs and no heating upstairs. So they put in efficient boilers, and so they weren't burning coal. That's just a little bit of the history, but that was all done because the housing regulations were saying that you had to, housing providers, particularly with social housing, have got almost, I think, a higher build spec than in the private sector, because they have minimum standards for bedrooms and things like that nowadays, which is
a difficulty, isn't it? And it goes back to that sort of thing around our locus of control, effectively with this policy. So. What I wanted to do is to bring this discussion back to,
well, I just wanted to say
to the policy to and to the climate change policy. Yeah. I know that your hand was up before, Councillor Strong. The point
I wanted to go is, and I think it's been addressed by a number of speakers about this idea of leading. And I think yes, we can set targets which councils can do. And I think if you look back over the years. And as a council, many years ago, we picked up about waste and recycling and wanting to do much, much more recycling, and set ourselves targets and introduce different ways of trying to hit targets and actually educate people on much, much better way of disposing of waste. So we try and minimise what goes into the purple bin. But there comes a point sometimes when you want to take it to the next level, asking people, sometimes they don't want to hear it. They're doing the hands over the ears mark, and that then you start coming into almost the carrot and stick approach. Sometimes there comes an incentive to incentivize really to do stuff. You start having to put in penalties to stop them doing what you don't want to do it. And I mean, we all know that if we drive too fast on the roads, we might be stopped and we might get a fine. And that probably keeps a lot of people speeding, preventing them from speeding, because they don't want to get caught, they don't want to get points, and they don't want to lose their licences. And it's when you start thinking of those sort of approaches, and it's probably government that's going to have to introduce them, that will change behaviour. I mean, the pandemic has made us all change behaviour.
Okay, so thinking about the specific question that we've got before us, do you think that the climate change strategy has things but is sort of sufficiently built in terms of leadership and setting those targets to enable us to achieve those objectives, or is there sort of an amendment that you might like to see added into that?
I think we have to make our targets hard, but be prepared that we need to, just in asking people, encouraging them, we've really got to try and incentivize people to actually want to go there with us.
Okay, I think Steve's heard that and can take those points away. I don't want to mute myself because I want to ask Councillor Morris for his contribution.
Thank you. My very last point, I hope. This is just about new housing. The reason that on the south side of Cambridge in particular, the standard of housing design, in my opinion, is very good. Basically everything they do on that side of Cambridge is good, is because they have a design standards committee which vets stuff either before, in conjunction with planning, so they can make sure that the stuff looks good and actually functions well, rather than the new houses in North Hertfordshire all looking like something from middle of the last century with Tudor bits screwed on. So if there is actually the will within North Hearts, you could actually have a design standards committee that actually vets the only new houses, not existing houses, but vets new housing, so that it actually does the job and doesn't look like something from the middle of the last century. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald. I think that might be something that's possibly being looked into in other places under the sort of SPD, which is one of those stupid TLA, sorry, three-letter abbreviations that I can never remember the real words for because we only ever use the abbreviation.
That's a free planning document.
Thank you.
It hasn't been dealt with. It's pretty easily done. I mean, I've been on about it, sorry. I've been on, not just recently, I've been on about it for years, actually.
Mm. But I think we have sort of looked at it. We are conscious of things like the Goldsmith development in Norwich as well. And I think Councillor Clark's done some work there. Okay, so I did see that Julia had a hand up earlier, but then it was taken down. Do you want to sort of make a contribution on the climate, on the strategy, Julia?
No, I was going to just come back on the homes in Letchworth, and I think you've moved on to that as well.
Yeah, cool, lovely. Thank you very much for that. Okay, Councillor Ruggiero Xhaka, do you have a point on the strategy?
Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of points. And I note that Julia's just said she's not going to go back to the retrofitting in Letchworth. It was just a really small point on that to begin with, if you allow me. We put retrofitting into the strategy, and we've had a really good discussion on it. I know that the housing associations already have their plans, and in the strategy there are plans to, as a minimum, make sure we just signpost the support for residents to the housing associations. But after the strong debate, I think there's, particularly in Letchworth, we should probably strengthen that in working with the Heritage Foundation. And then just a second point back to Councillor Strong's around our leadership. In the strategy, of course, there's that carrot and stick approach, and I don't think it's been mentioned, but there are these things called, and it's still being worked up, at Green Awards for businesses, which do show, the specific details aren't there right now, but an idea about businesses that do have excellent green standards. So when we're looking at things, we can also look at the carrot side of things to bring people up to where we need to be. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I will one day learn how to click buttons on a mouse and take myself off mute more quickly. Okay, so I think we've had quite a lot of discussion and debate around lots of things climate. We've got, at the end of the day, a strategy that is going to become policy at this council. We're a climate change panel or a cabinet panel on the environment or, words around that. How do we feel about this strategy? Is it something that we as a panel, given the work that we've done over the last 2 years, given the contributions that we've had and the conversations we've had with community groups that have expert knowledge in a lot of these areas, how do we feel about this strategy? Do we feel that it is good enough? Could we endorse it? Would we be happy if it became council policy? Do we want cabinet to look at it in further detail? Should we be referring it to cabinet and saying, consider this, we'd like to change X, Y, and Z, or we endorse it? I don't have the answers to the questions. I'm here to facilitate the conversations and the debates and the discussions. And I'd like some sort of input from members about how you feel about the strategy that Ruben and Steve are proposing. Is that a legacy hand, Councillor Strong? I'm going to say yes. Thank you. Councillor Levitt.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we all read of a climate change strategy, and this is an update to the one we have existing. Yes, we could do more. We could change more. We could go into huge detail on it. I think it does need to go to Cabinet and possibly Council to have a full and open discussion on this. It's the same as with the local plan. Any policy that takes us forward is better than no policy. It's a groundwork. It is a live document. It can be reviewed. It can be changed. It can move with the times. So I think it's really important to actually get it out there, get the comments in, get it in the public arena, and get something done.
Okay, so I'm largely happy with the document as it is. I know that there's a phenomenal amount of work that's going on behind the scenes in a number of portfolio areas, including mine, that isn't necessarily expressly stated there. As we've said, the biodiversity, the rewilding stuff is going to be covered in a separate policy document because it really, really needs to be for it to be looked at properly and effectively. Do we have any suggested changes, or are we happy to endorse this policy going to Cabinet? I've got Councillor Levitt's legacy hand. If I don't have any objections or loud naysayings from members, I will say that we're happy to... Oh, Sam's waving at me. You've got no blue hand, Sam.
Sorry, Chair. I was sending you a direct message about it. But you didn't see it. We did talk about a change on the targets from 2050 to being a bit more ambitious. So I think if we could put that comment forwards as this group and just make that formal, it's up to you, Chair, to do that, how mm-hmm. you want to word that. But I think that's something we need to take forward.
Okay, so what I'm hearing then is that in general, potentially this Cabinet subcommittee is happy to support the strategy as drafted. However, we would like to recommend to Cabinet a more ambitious target of 2042. Are we happy with that? I can see Steve's hand.
I'm clicking on the mute button too many times. I think that would be fine. I mean, I think that there were a number of other minor issues that were raised that we might want to look at as well. But that seems to me to be a sensible way forward. I mean, I think David Levitt is absolutely right. You know, we could go on refining this, and we should still be refining it in 2050. It's much more important that we produce something that moves us forward. And we agree with that. And, you know, next year we may want to revise it again. But that doesn't mean that this version of it is a failure. It will have moved us forward. So I think if the rest of the panel is happy with that, I'd be very happy to take it forward on that basis. And my intention is that it should come to council as well. I can't remember from the constitutional point of view whether or not it needs to, but I think it should do. So council gets an opportunity to debate it and hopefully approve it.
Okay, I think that is a completely, it's not my document to influence, and I'm trying to be a very impartial chair this evening on everything and be fair to everybody. But I think that Steve's suggestion and that particular route for this document would be thoroughly sensible. So Reuben or other responsible officers, do we need to have any kind of formal vote on what we're doing, or can it just be minuted and we can move forward from there?
I have taken a minute of all of your discussions and the suggestions for amendments or alterations and ideas to be conveyed to other responsible authorities. If you are making a referral to Cabinet, I think a vote would be appropriate.
Okay.
Chair, just a slight thing. I don't think we can constitutionally do it.
Oh. If we can't constitutionally...
Yes, Chair, to add into that, I think it needs to go to overview and scrutiny before it goes to Cabinet anyway, yeah. So...
Well, we can pass it straight on to Cabinet, but I think where the Cabinet panels are set up, they're informal, informative things. I don't think we can, much as we like to, I think the majority here, I don't think anybody's against taking this forward, Chair. I don't think technically...
I think we can express our opinion, can't we?
Yeah, I think that's the right
thing. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Clearly we've heard the issues that have been raised, but when it gets reported to Cabinet, then I'm sure that the discussion we've had this evening will be reported.
Yeah.
Because I will.
And if Steve doesn't, then I will as well. Yeah. So
I think we understand what we're trying to achieve.
Okay, Good. In that case, if everybody's happy, that's how we're going to move this forward, which moves me on to the final item of the evening, which are meetings of the 2021 and 2022 civic year that have been noted. I've been told off for stealing Reuben's thunder on this previously. So, Reuben, do you want to tell us all when the meetings are scheduled for?
One thing I haven't got in front of me.
Oh, I'll do it then.
Thank you.
Okay, so assuming things remain the same post local elections, assuming that they are happening still, I think they are. The meetings for 2021-22 are going to be on the 8th of June, the 6th of July, the 7th of September, and then the 22nd of February 2022. So they're essentially going to be quarterly. Obviously, at this point in time, we don't have a timetable or sort of topic lists. That will be decided at some point in the future. And I guess all that remains for me to say is thank you, everybody, once again, for a really good, solid, hard year of work and positive contributions, and for engaging with us all so well via a different medium in really, really difficult times. I think that the contributions that have been made are paying off. We're seeing that in a number of areas that this council is responsible for. We're seeing that in the strategy that Cabinet is now going to consider, and I think we intend fully to take through to full council as well. And we hope to continue working with you all going forwards in whatever form that might take. All right. So I have no further business for this evening. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your evening.
Excellent. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.